The Tony Awards are Sunday, and my guest Kevin Spacey is up for Best Featured Actor for his performance in Neil Simon's play Lost in Yonkers. Spacey has also been acclaimed for his performance in Jonathan Miller's production of Long Day's Journey Into Night, which also starred Jack Lemmon. But most of us know Spacey from TV. He was televangelist Jim Baker in a recent made-for-TV movie about Jim and Tammy Faye. Next Friday on most public TV stations, you can see him as the celebrated lawyer Clarence Darrow in the American Playhouse production Darrow. I'm one of the Spacey fans who first saw him in the TV series Wise Guy. He played bad guy Mel Profit, a twisted drug dealer and corrupt businessman with a thing for his sister. Here he is pulling a gun on the hero of the series, undercover federal agent Vinny Terranova.
Do you like roulette? One round, six chambers.
Come on, Mrs. Profit, I think maybe you got a nose full. Don't do this.
Not cocaine. Rule one, don't inhale the retail. What I take is medicine, Jack. Prescribed PX formulas. Dr. Feelgood's number nine. It doesn't put me to sleep, but it makes me feel a whole lot better.
Round and round she goes. Where she stops, nobody knows.
You've done theater and movies, but really, I think you're like your breakthrough role in terms of public recognition was on Wise Guy, in the role of Mel Profit. Did you expect that would happen on TV?
One of the reasons that Wise Guy intrigued me, both as a character and then in terms of how we approached it, was I felt that I'd watched so many actors play bad guys as sort of slick and antiseptic and kind of cool and in control, that because Mel was so bizarre as a character, that when you're playing a character like that, the parameters are much wider. You can get away with a lot more. I felt that if we could approach it almost with total abandon, which isn't done all that much on television, certainly in series television. And as I say, I must give credit to Steve Cannell and David Burke, because they really gave not just me, but the whole company up there in Vancouver, we were there for about 6 months, a sense of complete freedom.
You've said that you wanted to meet with Cannell before taking the role, and you wanted to tell him that you wanted to slowly build the character, and that it might not be clear right from the start what you were doing.
Well, yeah, Stephen didn't understand. I turned down the show at first, and Stephen didn't understand, you know, who this young pup, virtually unknown New York stage actor, was turning down a major role on a primetime series. He just couldn't figure me. So he thought, well, and Steve is a very smart and intuitive man, and he said, well, will he come in and talk to me? And I said, sure. So I went in that night. This all, by the way, happened in about 12 hours. I went in that night after I'd met him in the afternoon originally, and we sat and we talked for an hour. And I'd had a couple of experiences doing episodics as a guest, and they weren't very good experiences. And while I thought that I might be able to do something, I was afraid that the same kind of conditions would be at play on this show.
What kind of conditions?
Well, a lot of times if you're a guest on a TV series, you find that, in particular if you're not known, if you're starting out, you find that there's a lot of line producers who sort of stand behind the camera asking a lot of questions about, why is his hair like that? Or why is he wearing that tie? What's he doing with his face? Why doesn't he just play it the way God? And it becomes very confining as an actor to have someone there who is not necessarily artistically inclined making decisions and judgments. And on Wise Guy, because I felt that the character, I thought, this isn't going to be something that I walk on the set on the first day and decide how to play. This is something that I want to have evolve and grow over these seven episodes, and it ended up being nine in the end. But I thought I said to Stephen in this meeting, I said, if you let me do what I think I can do with this role, you're going to think that you have an actor who's completely lost his mind as you watch the dailies, which are what they watch every day of the film that you've shot, because it won't make sense to you, and it might not even make sense in totality, but I think we'll be able to do something that will be interesting and unique.
I'm interested in finding out a little bit about you. You were born in New Jersey, but you grew up in Los Angeles. Tell us something about your childhood. Why did your parents move? What did they do?
My father was a technical procedure writer, and he worked for corporations as diverse as Rockwell. And what that means is, very briefly, the guys who put together the F-16, they have to put it together with a manual, and my father wrote that kind of manual, not the F-16 in particular, but as an example. And my mother was a private secretary. She worked at Busch Gardens out in California for a number of years.
Busch Gardens, oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you go there a lot?
Are you kidding? I had more Budweiser sweaters than I can count.
Oh boy. I've always figured, you know, you can't afford to go to Europe, but you can go to Busch Gardens.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And I started when I was, I went to school out there. We moved around quite a lot. I think it's one of the reasons why I feel at home wherever I go, because we moved so much that I had to make wherever I went my new home. And I started a theater in junior high school. A guidance counselor suggested that I take a drama course, and I did, and they can't stop me yet.
Have you ever been very brash or aggressive about getting a part or getting an audition?
Extremely. I would not have done Long Day's Journey and Tonight with Mr. Lemon had I not taken no for an answer. When that play was being cast, the people who were casting it didn't feel I was right for it and wouldn't see me for about 8 months. So I finally went to a series of lectures that Dr. Jonathan Miller was giving stole my way into a party in his honor and got enough courage to sit in a chair next to him at one point and talked for about an hour and convinced him to see me for the part. And I did. 2 days later, I had my first audition, and he cast me. And that was in 1985, and I hadn't done really anything up to that point that merited me getting that role, except I'd done my work in preparing for it over those 8 months. And it was a breakthrough experience.
What were some of the things you told him when you got his attention that you think convinced him to give you an audition?
I think basically he understood what I had been going through in terms of trying to get an audition. I think there are you know, sometimes people in this business, in this industry, who think that directors want big stars and big names for parts, and when in fact they're just really looking for the best actor for it. And so sometimes it's hard to get over those hurdles, and I think he just saw in my eyes and understood the struggle that I'd gone through in trying to get an audition and was sympathetic to it. We had also talked for at least a good 40 minutes before I ever even brought up Long Day's Journey. I just got to know him a little bit and chatted, and I think out of that as well was what he decided to give me a shot.
Did you ever do stand-up comedy? I think I'd read that about you.
Yeah, you've done your work here. Yeah, I did, in California, actually. I did stand-up comedy for about a year and a half in clubs and bowling alleys.
Bowling alleys?
Oh, unbelievable. And let me tell you, when you're doing your best material and there's not a peep, and then you hear the sound of bowling pins being knocked over, it's really so encouraging.
Well, I don't know if you'd really find your audience at a bowling alley.
Boy, I'll tell you. Well, at the time, I was doing an imitation of Johnny Carson in my act, and I realized that people who were at bowling alleys for midnight talent contests don't watch Johnny Carson, so they had no idea who I was doing. They were absolutely clueless.
What other stuff did you do?
I did a lot of topical material. I even actually, somewhere on tape, ABC did a pilot for a series called The Comedians, which was something that they had done in Granada Television, done in England. And I hosted it as Johnny Carson. And somewhere there's a tape of this thing that we did in 1978. I was just out of high school. And occasionally, for benefits and things, I'll bring Carson out again because he's so much fun to do. And he's difficult to do. I find a lot of comedians who I watch do him do a very sort of high profile Carson. It's very high comedy. They're impressionists who have to be identified. Their characters have to be identified in the first 10 seconds. And I approached Carson a little bit like an actor. I went sort of underneath. And in fact, I was gonna do. I did the Carson show last year when we promoted the Jim and Tammy movie, and it was a big thrill to do the show because I used to hang out at the Tonight Show and watch him live almost for an entire summer to learn how to do him. I didn't get a chance that night to do him because I ended up only having 3 minutes, but they promised the next time I'm on that Johnny and I will meet. And you know what? Nobody will care. It'll be a weird thing,
But
oh yeah. So why did you give up comedy and go into acting? Was that your plan all along?
It really wasn't a plan so much as it was just the way things turned out. A friend of mine had come to New York and attended Juilliard and had been encouraging me through letters to, if I was really serious about acting, I should come and audition. And I finally did and was accepted. And I think I just decided that I think I understand why actors, why people like Robin Williams and Steve Martin, Billy Crystal, have gone out of stand-up comedy and ended up becoming actors. I think because stand-up comedy has so many limits to it that as a performer you just ultimately feel that you need to break out of it. I mean, I was never in their league by any measure, but I understand the idea of wanting to. And I was always an actor. Stand-up was sort of a sidelight, but it was ultimately an incredible experience and absolutely terrifying.
Well, you're doing a comedy now. You're still on Broadway with Neil Simon, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yes.
So you're getting his laughs.
I'm getting Neil's laughs, that's right. And they're much better than the laughs I was getting, I'll tell you, because Neil can write. It's great fun, this play, Lost in Yonkers. I actually, when I was in high school, the last award I ever won was for a fall drama festival where I did a monologue from Neil Simon's The Gingerbread Lady. So Neil's been very good to me, and it's nice to be doing his material again. It's also exciting to create a role for the first time. This is a first for me in Broadway. Hurley Burley I replaced in, and Long Days, of course, was a revival. So it's very exciting to play a role that nobody else has played and sort of get a first whack at it.
Well, Kevin Spacey, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Actor Kevin Spacey, this is Fresh Air.